What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and in today's episode, we're going to talk about a plethora of things. We're going to touch on the draft, who should Washington look at six, who should they look at 18, why I think it's realistically a two-horse race at number six, maybe some options even at number 40, and kind of give my thoughts on that. But we'll have another draft episode later in the week with my guy Damo, more so breaking down the individual prospects, the battle between Fears, Johnson, Queen, Ferret, and all that stuff. So I'll touch on that. But I also want to talk about all rookie teams, Alex Saar, Bob Carrington make it, Keyshawn George doesn't. The case for George making a team and kind of recapping, you know, why it's important that Saar and Bob were recognized for the great seasons they had. And then want to talk about some draft buzz. You know, I have a lot of people saying Con Knipple was Corey Kispert. I disagree. I'll talk about why. Why Washington could benefit from taking a score at number six instead of just looking at defense, and two-way players. Maloak, Saar pairing, how that could work. Wild cards at number six. So we got a lot to talk about. Trade up, trade back. But first, I want to start with the all-rookie teams because that's more so prevalent now, being that it was just 2 days ago that they were released. Washington has two players on the all-rookie teams. They have Alex Saar, who makes the all-rookie first team, and they have Bob Carrington, who makes the all-rookie second team. Now, I saw a lot of buzz, especially the last month or so, in the discourse on who should make all-rookie, who shouldn't. And there's a lot of prominent guys in NBA media that said, you know what, Alex Saar isn't one of the top five rookies from this past season because he shot 39% from the field as a 7-foot center. That was the main knock on Saar and why people thought he shouldn't make first team. And I understand that sub 40% for a 7-footer isn't great. But he did everything else very well. I mean, 13 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists per game, 1.5 blocks per game, led all rookies. Like he was very solid. He shot 31% from three after shooting like 9% over the first month. He had a month where he shot 46% from three on a really good amount of attempts. Very good rim protector all year on one of the worst defensive teams in the league when everything was funneled to him at the rim because they couldn't defend anything on the perimeter. Like all of these things considered, it's very clear that he was one of the five best rookies in the league. I don't know why that's even being discussed, but nonetheless, the voters awarded him. He was the fifth guy of five on the team, to be fair, but he still made it, and rightfully so. He's a first-team all-rookie. Great selection for the Wizards. He's got a lot of upside, a lot of room to grow. But Alex Saar ends up making all-rookie first team. And then you got Bob Carrington, who makes all-rookie second team. 9.8 points per game, 4.5 assists, 4.2 rebounds. And the most important stat, all 82 games. The only rookie to play all 82 games this season. That's probably the most impressive of all his stats. And in game 82, he has that game-winning buzzer beater against the Heat to culminate a very solid rookie season where in the second half, he really surged as compared to some struggles in the first half. But again, Bob Carrington makes the rookie team there. And then a couple stats from my guy Chase Hughes from Monumental Sports. Alex Saar is the first Wizards player to make first team all-rookie since Bradley Beal in 2012-2013. He joins John Wall and Bradley Beal as the only first team all-rookie Wizards players this century. That's saying something. Good company there. And then another one, Alex Saar and Bob Carrington are the first pair of Wizards/Bullets teammates to make all-rookie in the same season since Rod Thorne and Gus Johnson in 63-64. So again, it hasn't happened in, 60-plus years that, the Wizards have had multiple guys on the all-rookie teams. In terms of the reaction of the rest of the team, Castle, Risache, Wells, Edie, and Saar is the first team. Makes sense to me. I mean, I thought Edie and Wells were terrific all season. You obviously have Risache, who was the number one pick, had a very solid year. Svan Castle, rookie of the year. He was great. So understandable. I mean, Castle got all 100 first team votes. Risache got 99. Saar got 54 first team votes. Kalel Ware came in second behind Saar. Saar got 150 total points. Ware got 138. But nonetheless, Ware, Buzelis, Yves Missy, Klingon, and Bob Carrington round out the group. And what you will see is Keyshawn George was omitted from this group. And again, not to anyone's surprise, really, you know, when he missed the seven games late in the season, that kind of stunted the momentum that he had in terms of maybe making a late push. You know, 8.7 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 1.7 stocks per game, like very good numbers. And it's more so non-counting stats that made George shine. His defense, defense down the stretch, taking away the opponent's best player, clamping guys so they get frustrated, commit flagrant fouls. That was all noticeable. throughout the year, and it's not going to be in the counting stats. And unless you watched 82 games or however many 67 games of Keyshawn George, 68, you wouldn't really see that impact. So again, not surprised that George was omitted from the teams, but should it knock him or diminish the season he had, because he was terrific. And for most of the season, Wizards fans thought he was possibly the best rookie on both ends of the floor. So, you know, shout out to George, shout out to all three, because that's a really good draft class right there. Obviously, AJ Johnson didn't make it. He didn't play when he was off the Wizards. Like, he played like a couple games for the Bucks, and then when he was on the Wizards, he had some great games. He had some really bad games. So, you know, not surprised there either. He wasn't even in consideration for the teams, but kind of showcases the success that Washington had last draft. Hopefully, you know, they'll look to get that similar success in this draft. So I wanted to briefly touch on the role of rookie teams. Kind of went as expected. I had drafts in my tweets for each player. And I mean, I had Sar for first team, Bub for second team, George not making it, and just fired those off because it went as expected. So, you know, nice little note for Will Dawkins to kind of see the success of his draft from last year. Moving forward, obviously, you know, most of these pods are game recap pods or, you know, free agency or trade pods or anything that's prevalent. But they're going to more so be draft pods for the next, realistically, month. I mean, the draft's the 25th and 26th of June. We got a little over a month by the time this is released on the 22nd to just kind of dive into these prospects, because, you know, while the whole season for the Wizards is more so about development, the offseason is about the draft. The reason they sucked this year and last year is for the draft, and that's big for them. So I want to really make sure we dive into it. And as someone that I know the draft sort of, and I watch a lot of college basketball and all that, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm some draft expert and fire off my draft takes like I've been scouting these guys all year. I know other people have, and so I'm going to have Damo come on Monday to talk about, you know, specific players. Hopefully I'll have my guy Matt Moderno come on, because I know he's been plugged into the draft. Other draft experts that I'll try to get on at some point. I was on Yossi Gonsolin's pod the other day. He's the salary cap expert. I'll have him on sometime closer to free agency to kind of dive into the Wizards books and what they could be looking at realistically as some options. You know, they signed Valanciunas and Bay last year to cheap deals. Who are other guys that they can maybe get with some of the mid-level exceptions, stuff like that. So that's kind of a preview of what's to come. But I want to get into some draft takes and some draft buzz that I've seen over the last couple of, not last couple of weeks, I guess the last week since the draft lottery, and kind of give my take on some of these main points. The first one is, look, Con Knipl, I understand he's a white boy that is a really good shooter, but he's not Corey Kispert. I understand that's an easy link to make based on what I just said, but Khan is a lot more than that. He's a better shot creator than Kispert. He's a better finisher, and this is all obviously at this age, right? This is compared to Gonzaga Corey Kispert coming out of the draft. Khan's a better shot creator. He's a better finisher. He's a better shooter, better defender than Corey. He's a way more complete player than Corey was out of Gonzaga. And that's not to say Corey was just a specialist there, but that's mainly what he did, was catch and shoot jumpers at Gonzaga. Con Knipl, second best player, I believe, on that Duke team with Cooper Flagg. When Flagg didn't have it going, it was Con that, you know, made it work and made it happen, created his own shot. Wasn't just reliant on other facilitators to get him open looks. He got open looks for him and his teammates. These are all things that you can see from watching film. And when I first watched him, you know, I made the link as well. It's an easy comparison to make. But the more you watch Con, the more you see that he's way more than just a shooter. And now, that's not to say that he should be the pick at six. I have him right now as what I have a seven on my board. He's jumped Derek Queen. The more film I watch on Con, the more I like him. And that's not to be a knock on Derek Queen, by the way. But I just think that for me at six, and I'll get into this in a second, it's Fears or it's Trey Johnson. I don't see, because top four should go as the top four is expected. You know, Flagg, Harper, and then one of either Bailey or Edgecombe, 3-4, whatever way that goes. And so you're sat there, if you're the Wizards, whoever Utah doesn't take there at five needs to be your pick. Now, most mocks would say they need to take Trey Johnson because they have other guys similar to Jeremiah Fears that they can kind of develop. You know, they have obviously Colin Sexton at the guard position. They have Collier, who they just drafted. They have Keontae George, who's pretty similar in some standards to Jeremiah Fears. But they don't have that locked, you know, go-to score at the guard position, I guess. Trey Johnson makes sense there, but a lot of people think that Con Knipl is the player that they might take there in Utah. So we'll see how that unfolds, but I wanted to kind of like diminish that myth that Con Knipple is Corey Kispert. He's not. Just because they're white and can shoot does not mean they're the same player. Con's better in a lot of different categories than Corey coming out of the draft. Fit-wise, like, Washington needs a lot more, right? Like, I don't know if Con's ceiling is as high as some of the other players. I don't know if his ceiling is as high as Queen's. I don't think it is. But his floor is extremely high. I mean, he's going to be a solid player, which is why it makes more sense for a team like Philadelphia to take him. And we'll talk about trade-up scenarios in a second. But a team that kind of snuck its way into the top part of the lottery and needs a guy that it's going to contribute right away, I think Con is that guy. For a Wizards team that's kind of star hunting, I think that he's not the right player to pick there. And by no means would I be upset if they did. But I think, again, the Wizards will have a chance to take either Fears or Trey Johnson. I have them over him on my board. Obviously, I would think it's a poor decision to take Con over one of those two elite scorers. So that being said, wanted to kind of diminish that myth there. Moving on to my next point about the draft buzz. Look, while I tweeted this out the other day, and I received mixed reactions from Wizards fans or anybody that was commenting about it. But while a two-way player is preferable in, like, all standards, obviously you don't want to draft a player that's only good at defense or only good at offense. If they're good on both ends, yes, that's obviously preferable. And for the Wizards, it's been preferable, right? Because they've liked drafting these two-way athletic guards or forwards with size and length and athleticism. That's kind of what they want. But my point stands, while it's obviously preferable to draft someone like that, Washington needs scoring. They need scoring pretty badly, right? I mean, the stats back it up. Last season, they ranked 30th in offensive efficiency and 30th in offensive rating. They were 27th in the NBA in scoring last season in terms of points per game. At around, I think, like 105, which is pretty bad, considering the scoring that the league has gone into the last couple of years. And Trey Johnson and Jeremiah Fears, they offer immediate scoring help. They offer that offensive help that Washington so desires at number six. Because there were times last year where the Wizards played a good defensive game. I mean, against Orlando, one of the best defensive teams in the league, you know, Washington held them, I think, to like 99 points. But the Wizards, I think, scored like 84. Like, there's games where that has happened too, where Washington's defense was locked in, it played well, but their offense couldn't generate anything, especially without Jordan Poole, right? When Jordan Poole didn't play, you saw how different Washington's offense was. When guys who really can't, or at this point in their career, can't create their own shot or create for others, were tasked with doing so, it didn't work out so well. And that's good, because when you don't have a guy like Poole leading the way, it exposes some of the flaws and exposes some of those needs. And Washington still has a pretty big need, in my opinion, obviously, to get a go-to score, to get someone else apart from Poole that can facilitate, that can create their own shot. And that's, you know, I don't know if Jordan Poole is the answer at point guard. I don't know if he'll be here in the future, but I think he'll be here next year. And if you're looking to maybe make a little bit of an improvement, just draft an offensive player. I understand it's not the two-way guy that you're so desiring, but you know, Fears, Johnson are very gifted offensive players. And for a team that ranked 30th in efficiency and rating last year, they need it. And so, again, I understand that we need a two-way player at literally every pick. But, again, I'm fine with Washington just going score at six. Maybe you can draft another two-way guy at 18. Maybe you make a trade up with 40 and 18, move up three spots or two spots and get another two-way guy. I don't know. Thomas Sorber fits the bill, Rashear Fleming. There's a bunch of different options, right? But my point still stands. They need a score, and I think six is the perfect place to do it. You'll get either Fierce or Johnson, and you can kind of use them as a way to propel yourself off the mat of the worst offensive team in the league and start scoring some points and competing with some of these teams. Another question that I've gotten in relation to the draft, and mainly to six, is the Kaman Malawak and Alex Saar pairing, you know, will it work? I understand the reservations there. I have the same exact reservations myself, obviously, you know, pairing 2 7-foot players that are, you know, pretty similar in terms of they're good rim protectors, good defensive players. You know, Saar had shown the ability to make the three, and Malawak didn't shoot many at Duke, but throughout the combine, there was a drill where he went 12 of 25, and there's a wide open threes as well, but he went 12 of 25 from three. And so he's shown, I guess, an ability to do so, but they're similar players to me, you know, like The main thing with Malawak is he's still quite young. And, you know, on top of that, his wingspan, his measurables are off the charts. I mean, 7'2", he measured a 7'5" wingspan and 9'8" standing reach at the combine. I mean, that's unbelievable. Like, he has the measurables to be an all-world defender, right? But is that all he's going to be? Is he going to be some guy that blocks shots and you know, does all that type of stuff and maybe can't defend 1 through 5 like a Rudy Gobert on that end? You know, doesn't have any offensive game really whatsoever, but he's going to set screens. He's going to roll to the basket, get offensive rebounds, and defend. Is that really what Washington needs after you just drafted Alex Saar? I don't know. I think the two center lineups that have kind of sprung up in the NBA recently, especially in the playoffs with, you know, your Hartenstein and Chet combinations, your Jared Allen and Mobley combinations, you know, that's kind of been the resurrection of that lineup. But what I will say is they're kind of different players, both of them. Like, you know, Jared Allen's a more bulky, shot-blocking interior player, whereas Mobley is a great shot blocker, but he can defend 1 through 5. He's more athletic, but he can also stretch the floor with the 3. He can create his own shot. They're different players. Same with Chet and Hartenstein. Both great rim protector and defenders and all that, but, you know, Hartenstein's really the big screen setter and roller. Chet can space the floor and kind of defend multiple positions. Versus if you have 2 Evan Mobleys or 2 Chet Holmgrens, like, you're missing some of that bruiser down low. I mean, Malawak and Saar, very similar type players. And maybe if the Wizards think Malawak is the best possible player at 6, then sure, they trade back. Sure, that's another discussion, but I just think you're drafting 2 of the same guy, really, and I don't know if their skill sets mesh too much. And I think, obviously, at 6, you're trying to draft a starter, right? I don't know if you're drafting Alex Saar's backup at number 6. That's not what – you're not going to do that. If they took Malawak, I think it would be to ultimately pair Saar with him. And, you know, Saar could be a 4, and Malawak is a 5, so that could work as a twin tower combination. But at the same time, if their shots aren't falling from 3, you got a really messed up spacing in that lineup. You know, if they can't show an ability to defend multiple positions, you got a really tough, you know, task on defense in terms of switchability and all that type of stuff with scheme. So I understand that, like, it could be a cool concept to kind of try out, right? But at the same time, again, it all falls back to, like, it should be Johnson or Fears for me, at least at 6. But let's say, hypothetically, there's been reports that the Nets want to trade up with Washington for 6. That moves Washington back a couple slots. If you do that, pick up another first or set or whatever, and then you take on Malawak. I would be intrigued. I'd talk myself into being intrigued by a pair of 7-footers that maybe be able to space the floor and are great interiorly in terms of shot blocking. Like, that's intriguing. But again, I think there's better options there. I think it could be a little difficult in terms of the spacing and the whole concept itself. But we'll see. If they do go there, then we can talk about it further. And then the last main draft buzz I want to talk about is wild cards at number 6, because you're going to have your draft risers, right? After the combine, after individual pre-draft workouts, there's going to be some buzz about guys that have been skyrocketing on boards and kind of, you know, moving their way up in terms of they were supposed to be a mid-first round pick, but they're going to go top 5, top 6 now. And so you got Yegor Demin out of, I think it's Yegor actually, Yegor Demin out of BYU, who all season was really, this guy could be terrific, but the shooting isn't there. I mean, he shot very poorly from 3, but he offers size. He offers playmaking, a 6'9", you know, forward, really. He played a 3 or 4 at the NBA level, who can really create for others, create for himself, but the shot is definitely not there. There's defensive concerns as well in terms of switchability, athleticism. Can't he really stick with some of the more athletic guys in the league? The shooting concerns are obviously the biggest issue, and he shot better at the combine, right? But still has a ways to go. And so that's someone that I've seen. I'm pretty sure Matt Moderno has him pretty high on his board. I've seen, you know, Babcock Hoops talk very highly about him. There's a lot of people that are high on him, but there's also a lot of people that have him outside the lottery. There was a big debate on NBA Twitter, basically draft Twitter. Brett Siegel, who is like the insider for Clutch Points, I don't know how much of the draft he watches. According to a lot of different people, none. But he was basically saying, if you don't have Yegor Demin in your lottery right now, you don't really know what you're talking about. And there's a lot of pushback there saying, hey, we know exactly what we're talking about. Yegor Demin could be a guy that you should take in the lottery.
but he's also shown that he isn't that good, and he's shown flashes or spots that he hasn't played that well, and the shooting is a concern, the defense is a concern, all that considered, those limitations have him outside the lottery versus more polished prospects, and that's understandable from both ways, but that was kind of the debate there. I'm high on Demon. I think he should be a lottery pick. I don't think that he should be the pick at six. I think there's better prospects available. But again, it's more so like a I would understand it more other than a I would like that pick. And then Noah Assange out of France. It's another French guy. I mean, the pipeline is serious if they end up taking this guy, whether it's at 18, where I've seen him mocked more so than six. But he could be a high riser. He has size. He has scoring. He's an athletic wing that provides defensive versatility, switchability at 6'9". Kind of a, not Risache like. He's just very thin. That's probably why, like build wise, I'd say. But he is a Dawkins prospect. He fits that bill. And so, you know, I don't know if he'll be there at 18. I think six is far too high to draft him. But again, in that middle ground where maybe Washington says, hey, let's package 40, maybe a future second round pick, let's move up 3-4 spots and let's take this guy. That would make sense. The downsides are playmaking, you know, not the smartest player with the ball in his hands, tends to turn it over. Strength concerns as well. That's going to be a concern for most of these guys coming into the league is trying to build, you know, muscle. You saw that with Alex Saar, Bob Carrington this year. You just got to get bigger and sturdier to back down these guys and to really drive to the rim strong. And that's a concern there. But those are two wild cards. And at six, it'd be a surprise to me, and I think to many people, if they decided to take him over a guy like Fears or Johnson or Queen there. But again, we've seen some surprises. You know, no one really thought Bilal Coulibaly would be drafted at seven, but Will Dawkins traded up because he said this guy is great and I want him. And that's the high riser we're talking about. Bob Carrington, more so in that 20s range, early 20s last year, big time workouts and combine and all that. And he skyrockets up to the lottery at 14. Washington trades up for him. So again, you could see some wild cards, some crazy stuff happen in this draft. But again, I would be surprised if they were taken, if Demon or Assange were taken at six by Washington. But again, if they're at 18, that's a no-brainer, I think, for either. And we'll kind of go from there. There's also been buzz about trading up and trading back. I mean, when you have teams like Philadelphia that have no business whatsoever being in the lottery, they just had one of the most catastrophic, disappointing seasons of all time and get bailed out and keep their pick. Not only keep their pick, but they get a top three pick as a result. You know, you kind of look at them as a prime candidate to trade back or to trade out of that slot for a more polished win now player or more assets that they can, you know, trade at the deadline. And I talked about this with Yossi on his pod yesterday about trade up options in terms of, you know, what if Washington covets Ace Bailey so much that they're willing to part with pick number 18 in order to move up to three and take Ace Bailey, maybe like VJ Edgecombe, and they really want to take him instead of Bailey at three. A lot of moving parts here, of course. And I was on Fansbo for hours yesterday, you know, in preparation for this pod, trying to dive into kind of what it would take for Washington, what it would take for Philadelphia to be willing to move back. Because again, Ace Bailey to Philadelphia doesn't make much sense to me. Like, he's a very high ceiling, but he's going to take some time to get there, right? He was a really inefficient player at Rutgers. And again, doesn't make sense to Philly. I think Con Knipple is a great pick for Philadelphia in terms of someone that's way more polished and can help them win now because they have about a 3, maybe 4 year window with Embiid, PG, Maxi to make it work. And, you know, drafting a guy that's a project, you saw that with Golden State, it doesn't necessarily work. Where you have a win now team and you draft some, you know, developmental prospects, that doesn't really work. And so if I'm Philly, Bailey doesn't make sense to me. I want to trade back. Let's say they do, and Washington's like, okay, we want Bailey. Look, does Philadelphia need number 18? Maybe. But again, it's the same thing. They're an old polished team. Do they need a lot of draft picks? No, I think they need veterans that can help them and round out the roster. So I think future picks would be more so worth it than number 18, because that way they can trade those at the deadline for other guys, kind of giving them some other assets. So Washington has Golden State's top 20 projected 2030 pick. They have Portland's 2029 first-round pick from the Denny trade. They have the first-round pick, the worst of four different, that they got in the Jared Butler trade with Philadelphia, picking up Reggie Jackson's contract. So they have other people's picks in terms of their own as well. But second round picks as well. They have a lot to offer for three, right? I don't think 18 or 40 is enticing to a Philadelphia team looking to win now. And that's why I don't think it works, right? And you got to consider, I've seen a lot of trades where Washington takes back Paul George's contract. That's not happening. $51 million a year for someone that can't stay healthy, especially when he doesn't fit your timeline whatsoever. I think that's pretty stupid, especially when the Wizards have that top eight protected pick that they would like to protect next year. PG does not help that at all. So again, that makes no sense. It's just, I tried so many different trades for Philly and I don't like any of them. I mean, Corey Kispert could be a guy that they covet, but if they take Khan there, you want to add multiple shooters. And I mentioned they're not the same player. I understand that. But again, if I just drafted Khan Knipple, I wouldn't want to trade for a sharpshooter. That makes no sense to me. In Corey Kispert, they want Rashawn Holmes as a backup option at center. No, he's a non-guaranteed contract. Like, they could just sign him if they wanted, if Washington doesn't keep him. It doesn't make sense to me. The contracts don't work. And so I don't think it's going to happen at all. I don't think the trade can really be made unless like a multiple team trade. You look at Charlotte at four, they're going to just take Bailey or Edgecombe, whoever falls to them. I don't think they really want to trade out of that slot. They need talent in a big way to pair with Miller and the Melo and that team that they have. Utah at five, like, again, I think they're just going to sit there and wait for anybody that falls. Now, I could see Utah as a team that facilitates a deal to get Ace Bailey if they really like him with Philly. It's only two picks instead of three. Won't cost as much as it would for Washington there. And I could definitely see that happening, right? But at the same time, it's tough for Washington to make a move up, and I don't see one happening. Now, when you look at trade back scenarios, right? I also want to preface this, right? I don't think Ace Bailey is worth it for a trade up. Like, yes, he's a very intriguing prospect. I've seen links to Kevin Durant, which I disagree with. I don't think he's that good. I understand the comparisons, right? But I don't think that's worth it to me. Like, I honestly think that it's very, very possible that Trey Johnson, Jeremiah Fears, Derek Queen have better NBA careers than Ace Bailey. Like, he's not one of these generational can't-miss prospects like the top two players in this draft where I'd be willing to move a lot of assets for him. That's not the case. And there's a possibility that he falls. You could fall into your lap at six if you get lucky. So again, I don't think he's worth it. I don't think Edgecombe is either. I don't think they're prospects that truly separate themselves too much from the other players that Washington could take in that range. So, and that might be a hot take, right? That's just an individual opinion, but I don't like that at all. Some other trade-up scenarios that I've seen, the main one is Bilal Coulibaly plus pick number six to trade up for number two and get Dylan Harper from the Spurs. Look, I get it, right? I think it's too rich. I'm not going to give up on Bilal Coulibaly just yet. Plus, who I could get at number six for an unproven player like Dylan Harper. Look, I think Dylan Harper has a huge gap between him and Ace Bailey. I've seen the comparisons to Cade. I think Harper could be a star. It's going to be way harder for him to be a star on a team like San Antonio that has so many great players already and young players already to where I don't even think he'll start. But I think it's too much. I'm not ready to give up on someone that I think could be such a great defender in Bilal. And if he adds a shot, he could be a really good two-way guy. And whoever I can get at number six to move up to take Harper. Harper is just not that good for me. Yes, I do it for Flag and Heartbeat. And Brandon Miller, maybe. I think he was a way better prospect than Harper. But at the same time, I'm not willing to just give Bilal up like that just so I can maybe take a chance on someone to be a star. That's kind of star hunting. That's like being, how do I describe it? You're getting a little bit too impatient and antsy. Like, oh, we got hosed in the lottery and we haven't been able to get the top guy the last couple years when we've been tanking. Let's just go all in for somebody that could be that guy. I don't like that at all. I think it sets you back versus puts you forward. And that's not a move that I'd be willing to make. And I've seen a lot of, you know, dialogue. Some people really think that you have to get the star and that's the move. But I wouldn't overpay just because I got unlucky in the lottery. That's not what I would do. I would rather sit at six, keep Bilal, take whoever falls between Fears and Johnson, and, you know, move forward. You're going to get a top pick next year. Draft with the Boozers, Darren Patterson, a bunch of really talented guys that you could also get. I'm not willing to set myself back by trading Bilal there. Now, in terms of trading back, right, there was some buzz, and I don't know how much so many sources this guy has, but someone on Twitter said Washington was looking to make some moves. Another guy said that the Nets were looking to trade up with Washington because they covet other players like Fears, mainly Fears, at number six. I get that. Maybe if like Washington really covets Johnson and they think Fears is kind of, you know, a guy that they would be willing to pass on, you wait until Johnson most likely goes at five and you're like, okay, well, Brooklyn, where's Brooklyn? I think they're 8 or 9 in the draft. Yeah, they're 8. So if you're Washington, it's like, okay, we don't want Fears. Brooklyn's going to give us, I don't know, like 3 second-round picks, or Brooklyn's going to give us one of the first-round picks that they got in recent years and move up 2 spots to 6. And then Washington sees Fears go. They didn't want him. And then you're sat there at 8, and you're like, okay, you know, New Orleans, maybe they take Derek Queen. Then you can take Malawak. Maybe you like Yegor Demon, and he's going to be there. So, like, I could understand a trade back with Brooklyn. That's way more feasible than trade up, I think, with Philly for the most part. You know, you look at some other options with the trade back, like picking up an extra first rounder. I get the point there, and okay, like, let's continue to stockpile our picks. But this team has 8-9 guys under 22, 23 years old on their team. They have a bunch of young talent. They have 3 first-round picks from last year, 1 from the year before, a couple second-rounders thrown in there. Like, they have young guys. They have 10 first-round picks over the next couple years, 14 second-round picks. Like, they I don't know how much the extra first helps them. I don't. Like, OKC stockpiled all of these first-round picks, right? And they really haven't used them yet. And they have all of these guys, like, on their roster that won't really play, that they've used first-round picks on. And so I don't know how much that moves the needle for me in terms of, oh, I can move back 2 slots and pick up 3 extra second round picks when I have 14 over the next couple of years. That doesn't help me at all. Like, I need talent. I'd rather just sit at 6 and take the talent that I want instead of sitting back at number 8 and hoping that the guy that I want isn't drafted by New Orleans at 7. Like, I'd rather also just take Fears. Like, there's a lot of things that go into it. And I understand, yes, you want to keep stockpiling all these assets to trade in the future or use in the future. But at a certain point, it doesn't affect me anymore. Like, the Wizards have their own picks. Obviously, the one protected next year, but once that doesn't convey, it's just 2 second-round picks, and then they own all of their picks in the foreseeable future, plus 3 additional first-round picks. Like, they need talent. They don't need picks at this point. And so I think staying at 6 is the best outcome. And if Brooklyn blows you away with an offer, like, here's Cam Johnson and a first-rounder, I really want Jeremiah Fears, yes, you can't say no. At all. And he honestly, if it was not even an extra first rounder, if they just said, here's Cam Johnson and 8 and I'll give you 6, or here's Cam Johnson and 8 and I want 6, like, yes, that's a no-brainer by all means, because you could dump Cam Johnson at the deadline for a lot. You could also keep him. Like, I've seen him as a name thrown in the hat. That's why I throw him in that trade. But if it's me, I'm staying at 6 unless I'm blown away with an offer. This team needs talent. They need scoring talent mainly. And I think that's going to be available between Fears and Johnson at 6. So that's trading up, trading back. It's kind of some of the pre-draft buzz, some hot takes that I wanted to talk about from guys about Malawak, Sar pairing, Knipple not being Kispert, all that stuff considered. That's going to kind of wrap it up for this episode. Moving forward, like I mentioned, I got my guy Damo coming on, very knowledgeable about the draft. He'll be on with me Monday, which I believe I'll record Monday. That'll be out on Tuesday. Ideally, I'm going to be moving in the offseason. Stuff's more slow, but I want to do multiple episodes a week leading up to the draft, bringing on as many draft experts as I can to make Wizards fans and my listeners more knowledgeable and myself more knowledgeable about some of the prospects here in the draft. So hopefully we'll get someone else on around Friday or Saturday. But look out for that one with Damo. He knows his stuff. So I'm excited, looking forward to that. Pre-draft workouts are going to start for the Wizards. There's going to be some trackers. I know Hoops Hype does a pre-draft workout tracker in terms of kind of tracking, you know, who the Wizards are bringing in for meetings, who they're bringing in for pre-draft workouts, and that type of stuff. So be on the lookout for that. I'll be tracking that as well. But that's going to do it for this episode. Wanted to kind of fill you guys in on what I've been hearing about the draft, news with the all-rookie teams and all that stuff. So again, be on the lookout for my pal with Damo on Tuesday. And yeah, thank you guys for listening. A big month ahead for the Wizards in terms of finding out who they take at number 6 and number 18 at number 40 and moving forward. So thanks for listening, guys. Go Wiz.